Hey, glad you can make it. And welcome to the Employee Cycle Podcast, where we talk to HR innovators, thought leaders, and even some disruptors about the latest in HR trends, HR tech, and you guessed it, HR data. Well, you've heard enough of me talking. Now let's start the show.
Hey, hey, and welcome back to the Employee Cycle Podcast. I'm your host, Bruce Marable, CEO and co-founder of Employee Cycle, and you know us. Your HR analytics dashboard that's helping you bring all of your data from all your different HR systems into one place. That's right. You're an HR person. You try to report. You go to your different systems. You export some spreadsheet, and then you really don't know what to do with it. Well, no longer do you have to do that because you can actually use our dashboard to connect to your HRIS, ATS, engagement performance systems, employer brand, all this stuff to be able to pull all your people data into one real-time, beautiful, centralized dashboard. But that's enough about me and Employee Cycle because today we have a very special guest. So if you could all help me welcome Shelly Azen, founder of UnHR. And today we're going to talk about how to successfully manage HR transformation. Shelly, welcome to the podcast. Woo!
Good morning. Hey. That's a tough act to follow, Bruce. But good morning. Thank you so much for having me. Good morning, everyone.
Got it. And this is Shelly's first podcast. So we are very excited to help her share all her wisdom with the world. So, Shelly, the first question that we always like to ask to get to know you a little bit more is, how did you end up in the wonderful world of HR?
That's a good question. I would say by accident. So I went to school to be a physical therapist. And after the first brutal semester of realizing I was never going to get through biology and chemistry, I needed a different path. And a couple years later, found myself just really loving psychology and sociology classes. And so I thought, let's just stick with this and graduate and do well, because it wasn't happening with chemistry and biology, unfortunately. And when I graduated, I really didn't know what I wanted to do, and ran into a woman that I worked with when I was in high school. I had a job at a supermarket. Ran into her, and she had the same degree as me. She was about, I think, a year older at the time. And she said to me, you know, I've started this great graduate program in human resources. You should take a look at it, because I didn't know what I wanted to do. And I took a look at the program and found myself enrolled in graduate school the semester after I graduated college. And that's pretty much the story. I fell into it by accident, enjoyed what I'll call the classwork of it, and was fortunate enough at the time I started graduate school to be working for a small family-owned business. The owners found out I was going to school to specialize in human resources, and they were gracious enough to allow me to start interviewing candidates for jobs that were applying at that company. It was a unionized environment, so they allowed me to sit in on union negotiations and grievance meetings. I started handling workers' comp, you know, things of that nature, and they were just very gracious in allowing me to get my feet wet with what I was learning, you know, in the classroom, if you will, at night as a full-time working student. So that's the story by accident. And maybe part of that story is go with what your gut tells you and go with where you feel like you are the most comfortable and what sort of fulfills you. So maybe by accident, maybe on purpose, you know, just sort of followed what felt right and where I was getting fulfillment. So that's how I got there.
It seems like all of life is somewhere in between by accident or on purpose. And so maybe that'll be your first book.
Or our first book, since that was your idea.
Or our first book. There we go. I am not opposed to taking credit and dollars.
Or maybe Brene Brown already has one like that. I don't know. We'll see.
Got it. And then if you could just give us a quick summary about what UnHR does as well, that would be great.
Yeah, sure. So UnHR is an HR consulting company that I founded 2 years ago. You know, in my approach, my perspective is an unconventional approach to human resources. I take what I like to think is a very business-focused approach to solving people problems. So versus fixing people problems and then making those fit the business, I think you have to think about it the opposite way, which is what does the business need? And then how do people help fix those problems?
Great. So our topic for today is how to successfully manage HR transformation. And HR transformation seems to be one of those buzzwords that a lot of people are using, very similar to AI, machine learning, predictive analytics. And so to really kick this off, what does HR transformation even mean in the first place?
I mean, for me, perhaps it's a little bit of what I just said a few moments ago, which is if your organization is not seeing the results it needs from perhaps people practices or lack thereof, then I would argue that maybe your organization needs an HR transformation, or maybe a subset of that HR team needing a transformation. It can be something as large as, you know, doing a merger or an acquisition, and really how do you envelop two organizations and make them come together as one? Or it could be something more simple than that, like just taking one component of your HR strategy and how do you transform that to make that make more sense for the business. Does that make sense?
It does. It does. And you actually just touched on the first part that I want to talk about. So in order to really make this actionable, because that's why our listeners really love our podcast, let's break this down into three sections, including how to identify the need for HR transformation. What are some of the signals or things that happen that trigger this type of transformation? How do I actually execute on this type of transformation that I'm doing? And then lastly, how do I measure the success or the ROI of the transformation? Does that work for you?
Yeah, those are great questions. We only have 1 hour?
Half an hour.
Sorry. I already talked quickly. It's about to get turned up a notch.
All right. There we go. So let's start with how to identify the need for an HR transformation. What does that look like?
Sure. So it's a simple question. I don't know that I have a simple answer. So I think about it in two ways. In my experience, and I should say that I was an internal, what I'll call corporate human resources professional for, I don't know, 27 or 28 years, you know, worked my way up from, as I mentioned to you, that family-owned business, really de facto being a generalist while I was in graduate school with no one teaching me what to do, just sort of figuring it out myself with a very gracious owner, to, you know, becoming a vice president of human resources, and that job I just left a couple of summers ago. So, how I would identify, or what are some of the signals, could be either a new CEO takes over and says, geez, we're not getting the results out of the human resources function that I think we need to either A, you know, grow our business strategy over the next couple of years, or we don't have the right team in place to take the company to where we need to go with the new direction. And so how are we going to fix that? Often it's about expenses because the human resources department does not generate revenue. It really is one of the largest expenses that a business would manage because of, you know, payroll and benefits primarily. And so sometimes it's taking a look at the expenses and making sure that you're paying the right money and getting the right amount of return, for something like, you know, benefits expense. And it also could just be, is that function aligned with the business needs? So often it's a leader, usually outside of HR, that might identify that. Sometimes it's the leader of HR that can identify one, or will identify one component of what needs transformed. I have a very simple example. It could be something as simple as just the benefits spend. As I mentioned before, I had a client earlier this summer who spends millions of dollars on benefits. They have over 5,000 employees. About 3,000 of those employees take advantage of benefits. And, you know, they hadn't gone to market in a number of years, and they wanted to make sure that they were spending the right amount of money for the increase in cost of benefits, not only for their employees, but for the company itself. So that's one. While they were spending millions of dollars, I don't take that for granted. It's one component of the HR strategy, not the full HR strategy. The other thing that I find is simply when the HR team or the HR executive is having a hard time contributing to the conversation about how the overall business strategy, what the overall business strategy is, and how you will get there over the next couple of years. I often find leaders will call me and say, help the HR executive become more engaged, or help give them some coaching to become more engaged. And for me, it's really, you have to understand how your business works, how it makes money, spend time in operations, know what's important to the business's customers, you know, the external customers. And I believe only then when the HR professional and his or her team are paying attention to those things, that's when you become most effective. So by default, when that isn't happening, that's often when I find the signals, to use your word, of when HR might need to refresh its strategy or part of its strategy.
One of the things you said, which is interesting, is that HR typically doesn't see the signals, understand the signals, or probably is not the person that's pushing for this transformation. So for our listeners, how does HR become more proactive and understanding how to see this so that HR is consistently moving into this more strategic role versus being have to told or someone having to tell HR that this was an issue and then them being reactive, which is typically the perception of HR?
Thank you for calling that out. I certainly don't want to offend the listeners, and I'm an HR professional myself, and it doesn't mean to say that we're not smart human beings and care about the business. I can answer your question twofold. Sometimes it's because there's a new leader who has a different strategy or a different outlook on how they want the business to run, or a different direction that the board of directors is saying that they have to go. And perhaps the incumbent or the incumbent team just aren't right, are not the right folks to lead them in that new direction. For example, if there's a new leader and the business is going to focus on several mergers and acquisitions over the next couple of years, and no one on the HR team has done that, that might be a challenge, right? Or you need at least to get some external help to help the internal team prepare for that. So that's one way, and that's just sort of, you know, it's a new direction, it's a new strategy, and a new leader sees it in a different from a different perspective. To answer your question in a different way, and that is, how do we as HR practitioners become more open to seeing the signals? Is, you know, it sounds cliche, I know, but if you're not sitting in on those senior leadership meetings, if you're not part of that team, then you're not part of that team, and you won't know the strategy, and you won't know how to better impact the business. So in my career, the VP of operations or whatever that title is, that person was always my best friend at work. I always spent time in his or her office at his or her team meetings and departmental meetings, because that's the person that really runs, has in my experience, been running the business. So whether it's COO, VP of operations, whatever that title is, that's who I spent the most time with. And when I changed jobs, I often changed industry. So it wasn't like I worked in one industry my entire career and sort of knew that business. When I did change jobs, I was jumping industry. So I had a lot to learn about how do we sell to our customers, what's important to our customers. And I felt like unless I spent time with that operations person, I would not really know how we were going to make money and how to satisfy our customers and what gave us the competitive advantage. And knowing those things, that's how I could then have a more effective team, how I could recruit more effectively, how I could make sure we have a benefits and pay structure that served our employees and that maybe held us apart from the competition. So spend time with your leader of operations. That person should be, I always call them my best friend at work. If you don't know what they're doing and where they're going, you're already one step behind.
And when you're looking to be the strategic business partner, does it matter your size or your industry? Is it blanketed information or the same strategy for all HR leaders, regardless of size or industry? Or are there specific industries or company sizes where this would maybe look differently?
No, I don't think that. It's a fair question. I don't think that is different. As I think about some of the companies I worked for, you know, earlier in my career, for example, I worked at a company that had, 65,000 employees, and it was headquartered in Denver. And I was responsible for the Northeast operations. And so I was aligned to the senior vice president of operations from DC to Boston, over to Western New York and Pittsburgh. And my job was to stay attached to him, hip to hip, and make sure we delivered what our, in this case, it was a healthcare company, what our patients needed. There was also direction coming out of Denver, of course, but I wasn't aligned to the chief operating officer of a 65,000 employee company. I was aligned to the senior vice president of the Northeast operations, and I was supporting 8,000 of those 65,000 employees. So I think just depending on your level and your role, whether you're the vice president of HR for this 65,000 person company, or you're the HR business partner, you know, supporting 500 or 1,000 employees in your business unit, I personally would not take a different approach. I think you're the most effective when you are serving your business segment and those employees in that business segment. Now, the business partner role, of course, is very different than, let's say, someone who's managing benefits for the entire company or the 401k plan. I think then your strategy is what makes sense for the entire company, not that particular business unit.
Thanks for that. And in the same vein, when you're looking at the signals and trying to understand where are there areas for improvement and for this type of transformation? Are you typically only looking at how to transform the actual HR department? Or are you looking at how to transform how HR relates and works with all the other departments? Or is it a mixture of both?
Yes, it's for sure both. Often there are some best practices the HR team could take advantage of. For example, what kind of systems are you using? Are they applicant and employee friendly so that the applicants and employees are having a really good experience, you know, whether it's a candidate or an employee experience? People remember those things. Are you providing best in class benefits? You know, all those kinds of things that are what I would say specific to HR expertise. But also, if you're not aligning with the employees, for example, or the leadership or the trust of the organization, none of that stuff really matters. You're going to have really fancy, pretty tools. But if there's not substance behind it, like you understand, you can have a really, really great, fantastic, you know, let's say recruiting or branding campaign and wonderful HRIS or applicant tracking system tools. But if your recruiters aren't good at talking about the organization and why people should come work at your organization versus their competitors, or what are the wonderful things you do for your customers or your patients or whatever industry you're in, and get people interested in why they want to work there, all those pretty tools aren't going to make a difference, or those wonderful transformation processes or procedures won't matter. So some of those things are right just sort of on the surface. Like when I apply for a job, it's really easy. I click two buttons and I've applied. I'm not filling out 18 fields, ask me repetitive information. It's a really easy, quick system, but is someone calling me back? Are they talking to me about why it's great to work there? Does the recruiter understand the different shifts I may have to work, or what are the positives and maybe challenges about the position that I'm looking to apply for? So it definitely has to be both. And then the other thing that's, I think, really critical is there has to be a trustworthy relationship, and that you are a partner to a business. You're not just an order taker. I just gave an example about recruiting because I'm working with a client now where that's been a challenge for them. And part of the challenge has been that the recruiters didn't understand how the business really worked. No one sat in that department for 2 or 3 days to understand the pain points of the employees or what works really well. So you could talk to applicants about that and give that a realistic job preview. So when you're just passing through resumes that aren't really relevant for the role that the department is doing, then that manager starts to say, geez, they don't really understand what we do. So it's more of a burden to work with that recruiter. I'll just go find the people myself, right? And so you just have a lot more credibility. And then there's the trust in that you know how the operations work. And you're also a recruiter. You're a professional. And so you should know that posting jobs on one maybe industry site will be better than just blasting it on, you know, one of the generic sites. Or you should know that it may or may not be worth your time to go to a job fair, which is what that department's been doing for years. Or maybe you realize that, you know, texting candidates is way more effective than going to those job fairs or community events. I mean, that's where your level of expertise should come in as a professional. And when you share that with your business partners, they start to see that you're learning the business, you have really cool, efficient systems and processes, and you're a professional at what you do. And that's where the trust part of the relationship comes in.
That was awesome. So now I've identified problem areas, I've identified places where we have room for process improvement, whether it's tech or people process, all these frameworks and all these other things that I realize we can improve. So now what does this plan look like? What does this execution strategy look like? Do I write down a business plan with different use cases? Do I corral with my C-suite? So am I meeting with my CFO, COO? Am I meeting with different business partners, different department managers? What does this look like for me to actually put together a plan and execute on this for all this hard work that I've already done to identify these issues?
Yes. So after you identify, what I've done is I have typically gone to the business and socialized, you know, some of my ideas. So for example, let's stick with the recruiting example. I would typically say to the business owner, it's taking us, you know, we need to have some metrics, you know, 57 days to fill a job. I think it really should take us closer to 30. Here are some ideas that I have. Do these ideas make sense if we want to change our recruiting strategy? And that business leader might say, oh my goodness, that will never make sense for our business, and here's why. Or yes, that sounds great. Let's give it a shot and see if it works. So I think you have to socialize it with the business to get some buy-in so that they Well, number one, they're the experts in that particular department or role, so it's good to hear what they have to say. Number two, it shows you're being thoughtful about not just implementing changes that you think work, quote unquote, in HR versus need to work in the business. And then again, it's just good information sharing. So what I do is I try to socialize my potential solutions and give three or four ideas of things that I would suggest might work to do differently. And then I go find those partners in the marketplace. So in this case, I might go find a couple of good ATS systems that I want to work with. I might talk to some of my friends in the HR space and say, hey, have you ever changed your applicant tracking system from X to Y? And what was your experience? Or do you know anybody who uses this system? I think it's going to work well for us. What can you tell me about it? So I think, you know, tap into your resources and learn the positives and negatives of working with a new potential vendor. That's always really helpful. So you can go in with your eyes wide open. And then I would sit down with the executive leader, whether it's the, you know, VP of operations or COO or CEO, and say, you know, here are the problems that we identified. I have some potential solutions. I have talked to the business owner, and here are some of the dialogue that he or she and I have had, so that I understand at the front line what it might feel like to make a difference. And then here are some potential solutions that I've been thinking about, and here are the pros and cons of those. My proposal was that we move forward with talking to, you know, A, B, and C company to see how that works. And so I've done it that way. I think when you get, you know, as an HR professional, you know who some of these vendors are. You have friends in the space who can tell you those vendors that are easier to work with or more expensive or less expensive. But I think if you don't normalize that and socialize that with the business, you're losing an opportunity to make sure you're going down the right path before you get too far down that path. I often also find that the business owners are very thankful that you're including them in the solutions. And it's not just, again, your HR brain thinking about it, it's your HR and operations brain thinking about it. I think that answered your question.
Oh, no, it did. It did. And as you were speaking, one of the things that I thought is when I think about HR transformation, it almost sounds like a replacement for making HR better. And so I know there's a lot of companies and professionals like yourself that work on HR transformation projects, but in a sense, isn't HR transformation evergreen? And shouldn't HR always be always evolving and always transforming to be better?
Yeah, you bring up a very valid point. Yes. And you're right. I'm sort of stuck in the mindset of, like, I have a couple of customers right now that I'm trying to help fix a couple of things. And so you're right. I'm thinking very tunnel vision. But yes, and I go back to what I've already said, and I don't mean to sound like a broken record, but if you're not sitting at the leadership table and having regular conversations with the business leaders and being involved in what's happening, you will always be behind in trying to fix things versus... I have another great example. I had a client who was about $100 million and they needed to grow by about 25% in the following 2 years. And the way they wanted to grow was what they called naturally, which was by promoting their internal employees in these new markets where they could speak the company language and live it because they've already worked here for a number of years. And so we purposefully went out and, you know, touched a bunch of people on the shoulder and said, hey, you're a great employee. You're doing this very, very well. Would you be interested over the next 2 years in potentially relocating to one of these areas of the country? Think about it. Talk to your spouse. Is that possible for your family? And then once we got those folks saying, yes, I will move to this part of the country, we then developed a really robust training program around it. So within the next 2 years, we had internal people who could then go to those new markets and replicate the wonderful things about that company because they've already worked there and they know the history of it and they could speak the language of it. And so that's an example. And we grew then by 25%. The company grew then by 25% over those next 24 months. So that was a very proactive, thoughtful, what I'll call business transformation that HR played a huge part in and with the director of operations. It wasn't something that we did alone.
Nice. So we've talked about identifying areas for HR transformation, and then you did a great job of explaining how our listeners can actually execute on the plan. So now that we've done this, how do we measure whether the plan was successful? Are there certain metrics that we need to measure? And is that dependent upon the project? And just overall, how do we measure the temperature or whether or not the listener as an HR, people ops professional, or any person in any role or even an operations role did a good job with this strategy around HR transformation?
Yeah, I hope that we're in a time now that every HR department is measuring their outcomes in some form or fashion, in some way, even if it's, you know, still on Excel spreadsheets, or if it's something wonderful like using Employee Cycle, or you have an internal way of tracking it through your HRIS system. So there already, I would suggest that there already should be some benchmarks of data or baseline, of data that you should be looking at, whether it's, you know, retention or days to fill or your engagement survey or internal promotions, you know, those things. Once you identify what a potential area of transformation needs to be, I would say, make sure you put your pen to the paper and say, okay, what does that look like now? How much are we spending? What are the results? What are the percentages of success or failure in this area, whatever you're measuring? And then decide. So for example, if it's just particular spend, like on benefits, you might have a target, like reduce the spend by X thousands of dollars, then that's your target. If it's something like, you know, be able to promote from within to grow the business over the next 24 months, or reduced turnover in a call center department where there are 500 employees and we have a 20% turnover. You know, I think you sometimes know upfront what you want to get to. And so figure out, how do you measure that now? And then how will you measure that at the quote unquote end of the transformation, 6 months from now, a year from now, 2 years? So there is certainly, you know, black and white data that you can look at. But the other part of it also, I find, is having conversations with the operations team to say, is it better? Is it getting better? Do you see progress? Tell me why. I know the statistics say, A, we really want it to be at, you know, R. I think we're getting there. Does it feel different? Does it look different? Do you think we're making progress? And then how can we continue to work to get to the end result? Often when I am asked to, you know, just fix things and transform them by fixing things, and I'll just say, you know, maybe if they're broken, a lot of it is just the trust and the dialogue with the HR professionals and making sure that you understand, you know, what the operations team is trying to achieve and that you're quote unquote getting it. And I think they give you more latitude if you are immersed in the business and understand their pain points and are coming up with solutions, even if it takes a little bit longer to get there. I mean, I think that's a very long answer to your question, but there's got to be a baseline. You have to know what your goal is. And then there has to be dialogue in between to say, we're getting there. It's taking us a little bit slower. Or, you know, maybe we changed our strategy and we found that that really wasn't the right solution. Or we need to come back a little bit to the left because it's taking us too far to the right. Continuing to dialogue with the operations team to make sure it's really where they want to go is what will be crucial. You just can't just get to the end of the road and say, wait a minute, you want me to reduce turnover by 10%, so I've done it. And then the manager says, yeah, but the wrong people are staying, right? We need some healthy turnover, and we have the wrong people staying, and our good employees are still continuing to leave. So reduce the turnover, but the good people are still leaving. That really didn't solve the problem.
Got it. So now we're going to move to my favorite part of the podcast, which I like to call the real, the random, and the ridiculous.
Oh, boy.
Are you ready?
I'm not prepared for this. Okay, go ahead.
great. That's when I get the best answers. So the real question, Shelley, do you like to eat bread pudding? And if so, how do you like it made?
I do not like bread pudding at all.
Shelley!
I know. I'm a chocolate girl. I am a chocolate girl. If I'm going to indulge, it's chocolate or wine.
Okay. Well, nobody can be mad at chocolate and wine. It's like a great combination. All right. Time for the random question. It took me some time to think about this, but we're just going to go with it. It is pretty random. So the topic is around transformation. And so I wanted to ask you, you've seen the movie Transformers, right?
I have not.
Okay. But you get the premise that
yes.
Robots transforming into cars.
Yes.
So super random question. If you could transform into any car, what would you transform into?
You know, the first thing that comes to mind is maybe a convertible, because I love being in the sun. So maybe it's like I'm in a warm weather, just driving in the sunshine, beating on my skin, and it makes me feel good.
Nice. That was a great answer. And then the last question, the ridiculous one. Now that HR is moving into a more strategic, more thoughtful, more data-driven role, moving into people operations, HR is really getting, it's really getting its day and moving and really growing into its own. However, there are still people that still look at HR as the stepchild of the organization, unfortunately. And so what do you think is still one of the most ridiculous perceptions of HR today?
The one that frustrates me the most is when you walk into a room or you introduce yourself to somebody at a, you know, a dinner party or something, and they go, "Oh, you're the HR lady," with like air quotes. I don't know what those air quotes mean. Like, you're the police officer, you are the person that we should be afraid of because you're our morality police. I mean, that's the perspective I wish people would not think about anymore and just go, "Oh, cool. Where do you work?" Or, "That must be a great job." Just like you say to a, you know, I don't know, a nurse or someone that, you know, I don't know, that cures a very serious illness, or somebody that has a very artistic job that says, "Wow, that's interesting. I've never heard of that before. Tell me more about it." That's what I would love to happen when people say, "Oh, you work in HR. That's awesome. What are you working on?"
You're right. I don't think anybody goes to a networking event and somebody says, "Hey, what do you do?" And another person says, "Marketing." Marketing.
Air quotes around. Oh, you're the marketing lady.
Marketing people, right? You're the marketing man. You're the marketing lady. Yeah. I don't think they get that.
I don't think so either.
Well, Shelly, this has been an amazing and awesome podcast interview. So thank you so much for being such an awesome guest and sharing so much wisdom. Shelly! Woo! Thank you!
Thank you. It was my pleasure. Thank you very, very much, Bruce. I appreciate it.
So, Shelly, where can people find you and UnHR online?
Yes, you can just go to www.un-hr.com.
Great, great. So, all of you listeners out there, if you enjoy this podcast and had as me or Shelly on this podcast, then please leave us a 5-star rating, because that shows that you care and that we're providing great content. Also, if this is the first time that you've ever listened to the Employee Cycle podcast and you found us because you're already a super fan of Shelly, or you just thought that the topic was so compelling and you needed to listen, but now you're hungry for more topics, which is great, you can please, please, please subscribe to the Employee Cycle podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or whatever other podcast player you're listening to. And last but not least, all of you HR and people leaders out there, please continue to hire, train, and retain the best workforce possible. Thanks. Later, kids.
This episode of the Employee Cycle podcast was edited and produced by Lux Podcast Production. Lux is a creative audio suite that helps clients create, market, and measure their show. Visit luxpodcasts.com to learn how a podcast can benefit your organization. That's LUXE podcasts.com.